Parshas Yisroi is obviously the one of the focal points is Aser Sedibris, Kabbal Satera. But the beginning of the parsha, we're introduced to Yisroi. As someone sent me before Shabbos in the name of our president, Donald Trump, the parsha Yisroi is his favorite parsha, about a Gentile bossing around his Jewish son-in-law. That's his favorite parsha. But there's a lot of truth to that statement, that there is a very interesting relationship that takes place between Yisroi and Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Torah tells us at the beginning of the parasha, Vayishma Yisroi. Yisroi heard something that motivated him, that pushed him to join Klal Yisroel. So there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. Rashi quotes you a small piece of the Gemara in Zvachim. What exactly was the key to Yisroi's decision to become Jewish? What did he hear that pushed him over? So Rashi says, Kriyas Yamsuv u'Mechamas HaMalek. So the question is, there are other major events that took place during that time. Why only did these two motivate him, so to say? So we spoke about this other times in the Chumash and other years for sure, that what Yisroel was looking for was not just a relationship with a God who's all-powerful and can do miracles. He wanted to see that the Jewish people express their devotion and dedication as well. The only two times that Klal Yisroel had to actually get their hands dirty, so to say, or prove their dedication was by Kriyas Yamsuf u'Mechamas HaMalek. During the Makkos, the Klal Yisroel didn't do anything. They sat back and watched. They probably ate popcorn and enjoyed. So that doesn't show Klal Yisroel's devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The first time Klal Yisroel had to show, we really believe, is where we're going to jump into the water and assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to provide for us. Likewise, Mechamas HaMalek. The war of Malek made no sense al pi derech hateva. So why did the Jewish people do it? Because they would believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide for them. So therefore says, Yisrael, I'm looking for more than just a God who's all-powerful. Yeah, that's nice. But I want to see a people that are devoted to their God as well. And therefore what motivated Yisrael to come was Mechamas HaMalek and Kriyas Yamsuf. There's another pshat that they say over the name of both Rebbe Eliyahu Lapyan and the Slonim Rebbe, the Nesiv HaShalom. He learns Rashi very different. He learns Rashi that Rashi's coming to answer up a question. That Yisroi said to himself, you know, I'm inspired. But you know what, I'll get to it next week. I'll get to it in a month from now. Says Rashi, Mashmu Hashamu, but what did he hear? He heard Kriyas Yamsuf u'Melchamas HaMalek. He heard that if after a Kriyas Yamsuf, after the world all saw the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amalek can still wage war against Klal Yisrael, that shows me, says Yisroi, that all the motivation and inspiration in the world does not necessarily going to change your attitude. You could be inspired and motivated, and the next minute you're going to do something as terrible as attacking a nation who clearly is on Hashem's side. Says Yisroi, I better join, because if I'm motivated now and I'm going to let it sit, I'm going to be just like Amalek. I'm going to have the same issues of Amalek. I'm going to be inspired and motivated, and then a day goes by and I forget it, and I lost it, and I'm done. Therefore, says Rashi, Mashmu Shamu Ba, he heard that there's two storylines, that Amalek was able to experience Kriyas Yamsuf and still attack them. That's an indicator that if I don't seize the moment, I'm going to lose it. Rebbe Yisvei, the Philadelphia Rosh Hashiva, said it slightly differently. He said that Yisroi wanted to join Klal Yisroel, but he had a basic fundamental question on Judaism. His question was, is that the Jewish people suffered under the hands of the Mitzrayim by Paray throwing Jewish children into the water, drowning them in the ocean. We also know that Klal Yisroel, that Hashem has a principle, Mida Keneged Mida. So Paro worked around his whole life saying, how is it going to be that Hashem is going to punish the Mitzrayim, Mida Keneged Mida? It's got to work through water. But we also know, says Yisroel, that Hashem promised there's never going to be another Mabul. So Yisroel, his whole entire life, could never figure out how this is going to work. So for this reason, Yisroel said, I just can't join. I have this basic fundamental question about Mida Keneged Mida, plus the fact that Hashem said he's never going to be another Mabul. I can't. There's no way I can make these two things work. Says Rashi, Vayishma, he heard Kriyas Yamsuf. He said to himself, wow, unbelievable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came up with a way to use water to destroy the enemy without causing a mabul. He drowned him in the ocean. That's not a mabul. Says Rebbe Yisvei, that's the greatness of Yisroi. The greatness of Yisroi is when he can take a question that he had, and that bothered him, and it was a legitimate question, we'll call it. And the moment he gets a good answer, he's willing to change his entire outlook on life. Many people walk around with what they call questions and they get answers and they still don't like the answers because they're not really looking. They really have an agenda that they made up and the questions are merely excuses for why they're not doing what they're supposed to do. Says Rebbe Yisvei, that wasn't the case with Yisrael. Yisrael really, he wanted, he had a basic question. And the moment his question was answered, he was able to open up his heart to join Klal Yisroel. He says, that's the Vayishmai, to hear. The idea of Shmu, the power of hearing. Many times we hear a lot of things, but we don't really hear them. To hear means you really digest it, you believe it, you understand it. Remember when I was in Yeshiva, I used to have a Rebbe, and Rebbe used to complain, all his answers to us was, I hear, I hear, I hear. So we used to walk away and we said, he does not hear a word we're saying. There's hearing going into your ears, and there's understanding and processing. That's exactly what Yisrael was doing. He heard the words of Kriyas Yamsuf. He heard the story, but to him it was a much deeper experience. Tim had answered up his fundamental basic question that he had on so to say Yadus, and ultimately enable him to be able to join Klal Yisrael. The Pasuk says that Yisrael comes to town and he's watching what's going on with Moshe Rabbeinu. Like every good father-in-law, he's worried about his son-in-law. He's overworked, probably underpaid. The benefits aren't probably that good. He's worried about Moshe Rabbeinu. And he tells Moshe Rabbeinu, why is it that you're a one-man show? Let other people work. Why do you have to be a one-man show? So everyone asks, well, you needed an outsider, Yisrael, to realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was overworked? No one else could have realized. Aaron, his brother, could say, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, I see this is a little crazy. Maybe we can help you out. So the Mefarshim said, everyone was afraid. They thought it would be a breach in covet to Moshe Rabbeinu to say, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, I think it's too much for you. Yisrael is a father-in-law, he can do that. That's the greatness of a father-in-law. They can give Musa when they want. So Yisrael comes to town, he sees this is too much. But the Pasuk says something very interesting. The Pasuk says, what's Moshe Rabbeinu's job? So he tells his father-in-law, he says, listen, I got a job over here. He says, Kiyovei alai ha'om l'dur shalikim. People come to me to search out Hashem's words. So the Ramban writes, Moshe Rabbeinu had three jobs. He was a Rosh Hashiva, he was a Dayan, and he was a Rebbe. Doesn't say it like that, the Ramban, but that's what he means. Why? It says, people come to be Dervish Alekim. That's a Rebbe. They come to me, says the Ramban. They want to know what's going to be with their kid. Are they going to get a shidduch? Is their wife going to be able to have a baby? Are their kids going to get into college? They come to me, what's going to be the future? That's Mamash Rebbe. That's what people go to Rebbe's for. You go to Rebbe, you want to know what's going to be in the future. Then the Pasuk says, Kielem Dover Boy Leibish Shafatati. The next thing I do is I'm a Dayan. Two people come about a carcass and I have to paskin. So he's telling his phone, I already have two jobs now. Not only am I a Rebbe, I'm also a Dayan. I got a paskin shilas. So Mefarshim, how many shilas could they possibly have had? But living in a desert, that's why. Well, what type of shiloh do you have? So the Mefarshim said, this is all fighting over Bizas Hayam. They were fighting over, I got this in the Yam, you got this in the Yam, you held the first, I held the first, I had Dalaramas, you had Dalaramas. They're fighting over the Bizas Hayam all day. That's what the Mefarshim said. Because what else is there to fight about? No one owned any homes, there were no cars, there's no animals. What's the shilohs that you can have all day long? What are you judging about? Apparently, that's clearly from the pasuk that they found what to fight about or to argue about on Mamanis, even in the Midbar. And what's the last thing? I teach people Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells his father, you don't understand, I have three jobs here. I got a lot to do. I got to tell people what's going to be. I got to pasuk in shalos and I have to be a Rosh Hashiva. I teach Torah. I'm a Rebbe. I have three different positions. So his father tells him this is not a good idea. And they come up with this idea of setting up other people. The Mefarshim point out this was actually a very good idea for the future of Klal Yisrael, because if there wouldn't be other Dayanim and other people involved, there would only be one way of thinking in Torah. Can you imagine learning a sugi without a machlokes b'shainim? That wouldn't be any fun. If it all be Moshe Rabbeinu's decision, so everything would be Moshe Rabbeinu. There's no way to have any machlokes. Whatever Moshe Rabbeinu says is halacha l'Moshe b'Sinai, and that would be it. No discussions, no arguments, no other ways of thinking. So by opening up the court systems to other people, now again, this must have been a major avodah for Moshe Rabbeinu, because someone had to teach them all these halachas. You know, this is not to be a dayan, you have to know a lot of things. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to sit down and learn and teach them. But at the end of the day, it opened up other ways of looking at things. Because if not, things would be very boring. One way of thinking and only one way, it's not as exciting as it is today. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu opened up. And then when it has the pasuk end, he listens to the advice of his father-in-law and he sends him on his merry way. Says the pasuk, Vayishalach Moshe Choisnoi, he sends him back home and he goes home. So that's the lesson of the parasha, is when you give advice to your son-in-law, don't sit around and see if he follows it. Don't give him any more advice. You said your 2 cents, now it's time to go back home, and hopefully he'll take he'll take the word seriously and he'll do what he needs to do. But the truth is, the Mefarshim say, Yisrael went back home to be Megayah, all those back in his town of Midian, and that's why he went back home. But the truth is, and all kidding aside, this parasha is a discussion, la halacha, there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Kibud Avim, that a person is obligated to honor both his father-in-law and mother-in-law, that's a chiv. And we don't learn from this parasha, even though there is a question, because there's a medrash that says that Mikan Muchan, we learn from over there, a person should be ready to honor his father-in-law. Because the pasuk says, Vayitze Moshe l'kras chosnoi, he went to greet his father-in-law. That shows covet. So halacha l'maisa, there is a chiv to be mechaber one's father-in-law and mother-in-law. My mother-in-law always reminds me that when I say this halacha, it's mother-in-law also. Although Shulchan Aruch doesn't say mother-in-law, then I say Kalim say mother-in-law also. But okay, Shulchan Aruch only says father-in-law. So it's something serious, something seriously out of the parasha, although it's not directly derivative from this parasha, because in Mefarshim have a whole discussion with Avad Yosef and others. Why don't we live from this parasha? We don't, but the halacha is still true that a person is obligated to honor one's father-in-law. When it came to Kabbalah Satori, Klal Yisrael experienced, says Rashi, quoting the name of the Medrash, a certain special unity.
Isn't the wife honors the mother because of the
side of her
husband?
That could be true. That's a shmuz for a different time. Why exactly is there a chiz mechaber one's in-laws? Right, one's in-laws didn't put you to school, and they didn't diaper you, and they didn't take care of you in the early ages. That's part of a bigger shmuz I've given here many times, I think, about why you have a chiz mechaber your grandparents. There's halach and shulchan aruch also, that a person's mechaber his grandparents. That also doesn't seem to fit the narrative that we have. So, okay, I'll mention it now, it's going to get to the parsha. In this week's parsha, we had kibud avayim. So the Meshech Chachma points out, everyone thinks kibud avayim is because they give you a lot of things. They support you, they take care of you, and they take you on trips. There's only one problem. When the Klai Yisrael got the commandment of Kibud Avim, they were in the desert. In the desert, they got the mon. The parents didn't do anything. They went outside and collected the mon. I don't know where they went on Chalmai trips. I'm not sure where they went midwinter in the Midbar. I'm not sure. But the mice, the parents didn't really give up any of their own financial work. They just went outside, collected the mon, and brought it home. The clothing never worn out, so they never had to go shopping. So tuition was probably free at that time. So if all the reasons why Mechaber our parents is because of all the things they give us, so then the Torah should have given the mitzvah much later on in history, not during this time. So the answer is that's obviously not the only reason why we honor our parents. The reason why we honor our parents is not just because they give us things. The reason why we honor our parents is because they are people in our life that we can depend on. There's very few people in the world that we know we can depend on no matter what's really going on. Or no matter how much trouble we get into. There's certain people we know we can turn to no matter how bleak things look, and they will try to help us as much as they can. I think that's pshat and why I want us to honor their parents. If that's a pshat, so maybe on a lower level, that's pshat why you have to honor in-laws, grandparents, even an older brother. There are certain unique people in our life that we know, that we really get in a bind, that we know we can turn to them, and hopefully they'll, in return, help us out. And that's, I think, a good part of why there's a chit mechaber these people. It's not because they raised you, it's not because they got up at 3 o'clock in the morning to give you bottles, it's not that. Obviously, that's a karsha type, that's an important element. But the deeper relationship that a child and a parent have, that a parent is there for their child, no matter what is going on, parents don't turn their back on their children, they're always trying to help as best as they can, they always have the best interest of the child, hopefully, in mind. So for these reasons is why a person has a chiv to mechaber them. And I think that applies to both grandparents and in-laws. It makes for a great drush if you have to speak at, you know, an anniversary party or something like that, or someone's birthday. These types of ideas, I think there are certain people in our life that just, we know we can count on them. And because we can count on them, that requires such a chiv. And Nebuch had a girl once called me up. She said she came from a very abusive family. Her parents were horrible. Is there still a chiv to mechaber them? Sadly enough, the answer is yes. Although it doesn't sound right and doesn't sound moral, that might be the case. Again, at the end of the day, we're not Derish time of the cross so much, so you might have to do it anyways. Even there's a tshuva from Reb Zilberstein where he talks about a case of an adopted child, where a child was put up for adoption and he now has forced adoptive parents. And the adoptive parents say, I forbid you from going to see your natural parents. So he has a whole discussion in Paiskim whether or not that's really permissible. Because adoptive parents, you only have a chiv al sakar satoif. Your real parents, even though again, they gave you up for adoption, they weren't nice, but the Torah says you have a chiv to mechaber them. So it does get very emotionally driven and somewhat complicated, but at the end of the day, when the Torah is telling us a mitzvah to mechaber them, I believe it's more than just that they give us things or they don't give us things, it's that innate relationship, deep relationship that a parent has with a child. By Kabbalah Satori, Rashi quotes the Medrash that says, Klal Yisrael is ki'ish echad b'lev echad, one unified nation. So my Rebbe, Rav Kalman Epstein, once said over when he was in the hospital on Yom Kippur with his wife, who ultimately passed away from her illness. He was in the hospital with her in Manhattan on Yom Kippur. And they asked him to give a drasha before Ne'ilah for all the people that were spending Yom Kippur in the hospital with a sick family member. And he spoke about this Rashi. He asked on this Rashi, he said he found it very hard to believe. This was the first time Klal Yisrael got unified. There was so much time in the Midbar, in Mitzrayim, there was never unity amongst the Jewish people. So he said, of course there was. He says, during the Sheba and Mitzrayim, there was endless amounts of unity. And during Kriyas Yamsuf, there's probably unity also. He says, but this was the first time there was unity, not because we're being oppressed. This was the first time Klal Yisrael was not being chased by someone, attacked by someone, suffering under someone else. And he explained, to be unified when you're suffering doesn't take that much work. When people come together, mitoch tzara, when people come together because things are not good, it's natural. That doesn't mean that Klal Yisrael is a special nation. But if we can unify when things are not bad, and when things are good, and no one's chasing us, and no one's trying to kill us, that shows that we're really something. So he said, that's what happened over here. Finally, when they got to Arsinai, no one was chasing after them. Mitzrayim was done, Amalek was done, nothing. Life was great. Life was perfect. They were so excited, they were about to get the Torah, everything was great. So now's the time when we usually don't care so much about unity. We don't feel the urge to unify and be one. Therefore, when Klai Yisrael was unified at this time, that shows something special that Klai Yisrael can unify. So he said to the people, he said, we all spent the Yom Kippur here together in the last 25 hours, you know, mitoch tzar. And we all grew together, we unified. He said, but the greatness would be is if we leave this hospital, and in 2 months from now we can still be close, when hopefully everyone got better, and things are better, and we could still keep that close connection, that would be something special. Just to say, to be unified when things are bad, that's no big deal. And if we open our eyes, we see this all the time. Whenever there's fights between left and the right, and different groups, and this side and that side, all we need to bring everyone together is a tzara. Once a tzara happens, all of a sudden everyone is together. It's sad, but it's so true. Whenever there's some form of a split in Klal Yisrael between two different groups, usually within a couple of days we'll see some major unification. It's usually through something like a tragedy, because tragedy brings us together. So the Pasuk is telling us we shouldn't have tragedy be the one that brings us together. Because I believe, and Rabbi Franz said a similar line once also, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu said, listen, you guys have to be unified. There's two ways we can do this. We could do it the natural way, we do it on your own, or I'm going to bring you two together through tzaras. So if we do it on our own, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have to bring the tzaras. But if we don't, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, we have to be unified, because that's what it means to be Klal Yisrael. So I'm going to do it my way, if that's what it takes, which sometimes involves tzaras and suffering. So therefore, the lesson of Matan Torah was the unification of Klal Yisrael, not mitoch tzar, not mitoch chak, but instead because of simple joy and happiness. And it's worth mentioning, the end of the Aseret HaDibros is, don't have desires for things that are not yours. So the Mefarshim, Rishonim ask, how can HaKadosh Baruch Hu demand of us what's in our mind, what's in our heart? HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands us to do activities, actions, not actions. How can he demand what's in our heart? So if anyone's ever been on a diet, and I've tried it many times, is that when you're really into the diet and you're succeeding, and you look at something that's not on your diet, you don't have a taiva for it. At least I don't. Because he says, if I eat this piece of cake, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to then feel gross, and then I'm going to have to go set back, or I'm going to have to go to the gym extra half hour to work it off. It's just not worth it. So you say, I'm not interested. If we can convince ourselves that things that are not ours are like that, I have no desire for it. It's not mine. If Hashem wanted me to have that, I would have it. So if it's not mine, I have just no taste for it. I have no desire. I have no want for it. The answer is we don't look at it like that. Now, why is it that most of from Yidden don't have a desire to walk into a cheeseburger and buy a cheeseburger? Because we look at it as like, this is repulsive by us. This is not us. We look at this as not something on our menu. If we looked at our friend's stuff like that, so we just would have no time for it. This is so not, doesn't get me going, so to say. Not that that's easy either. That's a big avoid as well, to say to yourself, listen, if I wanted this, Hashem would give it to me, so I don't need it, it's not best for me. If I looked at my friend's bank account and say, this is poison to me, and not easy to do, so I'd have no time for it. The same way when you look at a Goyisha lifestyle, you say, wow, I have no desire for that. That doesn't look at all desirable. So if a person looks at things like that, I think that's would make it slightly easier to be able to control our desires and our wants, make it a little easier to fulfill what the Torah asks of us. Okay, today's agenda is to really finish up the sugya, and Emet Hashem next week start a really, really new sugya, completely new sugya, irrelevant to what we've been talking about in the past. But let's just first finish up over here, just a quick recap. We had over here in the Gemara, the Gemara had Mishnah. The Mishnah said if you throw the get closer to her, divorce, closer to him, not divorced. We had two major pshatim in what close means. We had Rav who said it means four amis. Rabbi Yochanan says it means if you're able to guard it or not able to guard it. Now we have the last piece of the Gemara. Zog the Gemara. Amar le Shmuel le Behuda. Shmuel said to Behuda, Shinana, sharp one. Okay? Everyone translates that word Shinana, sharp one. But the truth is, if you look in the Aruch has a second pshat. The second pshat of the Aruch, the word Shinana means big teeth. Now, I found an unbelievable tshuva from the Ben Ish Chai. The Shashin's tshuva is Torah L'Shma, the Ben Ish Chai. He has the following tshuva. He writes that it's number 1b. Again, we try to keep the Lomdash Hashem off halacha, but this I thought I couldn't pass this up. So the Ben Ish Chai has the following tshuva. He says, She'ela, Misha choit my godel. Someone who has a big nose. Imutal l'kroya baal choitim. Yeah, I call him, somehow a knock about his nose. Aydom chashiv zegnosa. That's an insult. Vuhu b'chalosh in harvas. That was a shayla ben Ishchai had. Listen to what he answers. He says, "Metzina b'kama duchte la mashmuel." We find many places that Shmuel the Karle Yehuda Shinana. We know, as our Gemara quotes, that Rabbi Yehuda, the Shmuel used to refer to as Talmud Shinana. The Eish was that base perushim. There's two pshat in what Shinana means. Ha'echad Shinana charif u'mechoided sharp. Yeah, that's a compliment. Correct. V'habeis perushim shin of gedolim. He had big teeth. U'beis perushim hey meksuvim b'sefer aruch ha'insham. Both pshat were brought down by the aruch. He says, "V'imkein if he pirush habeis no malan nidan ha'shayla the less bumba." So according to the second Pshat of the Aruch, if Shmuel called his Talmud something about his body, it's obviously not insulting, it's mutter. We'd like to believe Shmuel wouldn't go around insulting people, so obviously it's mutter. Says the Ben Ishchai, Miu near the Dover Zenid on the Fio Eitz V'Hazman. Says, not so fast. this might be a cultural type of thing. You have to know when in history and where in history this took place. Well, if he died, maybe every person is different. If it's not normal to call a guy, you know, nosy who has a big nose, I raise a chashim knutz of aser. I have a hadush Shmuel, so why did Shmuel call his Talmud big teeth? Shani Yeshua, Mikachai, Darko Shemini Adam, is Manahu, the question is Shino, I mean Shisham, Gedoilim. That was the way they referred to people with big teeth. They called them, you know, teeth. Okay? For here, Darko Mahakbid Bezeh, no one got insulted. Kilo Yonechshev Lehem Dover Zeluganos. So it wasn't deemed insulting. I would just add, I think that's a bad idea for any Rebbe to refer to a Talmud. That wouldn't work today. If a Rebbe calls a Talmud by any one of his various physical chesroinus, I believe he'll be out of a job and probably a lawsuit pending as well. So I wouldn't suggest it for chinuch today, but it's a definitely interesting tshuva from the Ben Ish Chai, how he brings a raya from our Gemara, which is the godless to this shtickle is that, you know, we read these types of Gemaras, we kind of like, oh, move on. It's just a name, right? He actually used each word of the Gemara, even a name in the Gemara, to bring out a halacha l'maisa. In any case, so Yehuda told, Shmuel told this Talmud Shinano. He told him, Kadesha Tasuach Vitzitlenu. He told him, it has to be that the Ish is able to bend down and pick up the get. But you shouldn't do anything until the get gets to her hand. What do all these words mean? Shmuel tells his Talmud Rabbi Yehuda, you have to look at it as if she has to be able to bend down and get the get, but don't do anything until the get gets to her hand. What does all this mean? And then Mark continues, Amalei of Mordechai Ravashi, Haviyov the Hochi, there was a story like this, V'atzvichu Chalitza, and they required Chalitza. So what exactly did Shmuel tell Rabbi Yehuda? So Rashi learns over here, Akideshe Tasuach V'titlenu, Hu Dehave Korva Demasnisen. Shmuel told us two chidushim. The first chiddush is Shmuel had his own opinion of how to read the Mishnah. Rav had an opinion, Rabbi Yechon had an opinion, now Shmuel has an opinion. They're all Amoraim, they can all have a sheet on things. So Shmuel's opinion on the Mishnah is that when it said in the Mishnah, Karav Law, it didn't mean Dal Ramis, it didn't mean able to watch it, it meant is it close enough that she can bend down and pick it up. That's the definition of closeness in the Mishnah. That's chiddush number one. Va'afilu hachi, and even though that's pshat in the Mishnah, at lo tavet uvda la teri li nase. Don't ever use such a get to permit a lady to get remarried. Ad the mod gitl yode. Never permit such a get, although the Mishnah permits it, and you're telling me that's what the Mishnah means. Says Shmuel to Rabbi Huda, I'm telling you, as your Rebbe, don't ever permit an Isha like that to get married. Why? Because we're afraid. Maybe whenever you're dealing with these types of situations, there's always a room for error, and it's too risky. So although the Mishnah says that such a get's acceptable, I'm telling you, don't ever accept such a get to allow a lady to remarry. Says the Gemara, Havi Ovda, there was such a story, Shazarku Karav Law, where they threw the get closer to her, to which it met Shmuel's criteria of Kadesha Tesuach Vatatlani, she could bend down and pick it up. That's Rechu Chalitza. And still Shmuel required Chalitza for the woman who obviously had no children. And he didn't just say, hey, you're a free bird, you have a get. Because Shmuel really believed, although the Mishnah says, now this is tricky because Shmuel can't argue on a Mishnah. Right, Shmuel's an Amor, he can't really argue on a Mishnah. So he's saying, although the Mishnah clearly ruled that that's acceptable, I'm telling you, don't accept that, and always require a real get, a get that goes into her actual hand. That's the words of Shmuel. Now, so the question is, so how did Shmuel learn the Mishnah? Why did the Mishnah justify it, while Shmuel had a difficulty justifying it? If the Mishnah had no such gzeir, why would Shmuel make up such a gzeir? So we'll see in the Rishonim how exactly to get around such a problem. So according to Rashi's pshat,
you always have this problem with anything.
And
you know if he did it. So
that's what we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see if whether or not Shmuel is arguing on them or he's just adding. We'll get to that hopefully
so
today.
It's not like when the day of the mission is derisive. It's not a tekanah derabanan.
That's possible.
Why are you making Zera to undo a tekanah derabanan?
Well, you were making Zera that we shouldn't continue with the tekanah derabanan.
But first of all, how can you do that?
So let's see how this all works.
Does he reject the because he says she could bend down?
So according to Rashi, it seems like Shmuel is rejecting both Rav and Rabbi Yechonon. He doesn't like Rav's Pshat in the Mishnah, he doesn't like Rabbi Yechonon's Pshat in the Mishnah. He's learning his own Pshat in the Mishnah. Now, why doesn't he like the other two Pshatim in the Gemara? So why he doesn't like Rabbi Yechonon, I think, is easy. As we mentioned, Rabbi Yechonon was mamish and made up, pulled out of Shemayim, that if you can watch it. But what's wrong with Rav? Rav was Dal Aramis. Dal Aramis is the Dover that's Muskim B'cholotor Kula. Why would he not like Dal Aramis? So the Ritva explains over here. The Ritva learns like Rashi. Says Ritva number 3, Shmuel amasnisin koi. Shmuel is referencing back to the Mishnah. Va'akum to the masnisin u deka'ovit. He was going back on the case of the Mishnah. V'lav la'flugi ale de Rav bar ba'amis. He wasn't arguing on Rav's Tal Ramis. Everyone agreed that Amos works. Elohocha Berusha Ser Rabbi Mamish. He who said that, what's the case in the Mishnah? If we go back to the Mishnah, Daf Ayin Ches, it says we're talking about a case where it's in Rusha Ser Rabbim. Rusha Ser Rabbim, Shmuel said, no, there's no Dal Amos in Rusha Ser Rabbim. Therefore, the Shmuel Savad Arba Amos ain't Kainis Lahadam El Basimta. You can't have Dal Amos in Rusha Ser Rabbim. So when Shmuel came to this Mishnah and he saw how Rav learned the Mishnah, he said, nah, it can't be. Now, the truth is, if you remember, the Rishonim had this kash and Rav. How do you learn Dalai Lama's Rishis Rabbim? There's no Dalai Lama's Rishis Rabbim. So Rishonim gave a couple of answers. One answer was, Enechanami, it's Machlegis in the Gemara, and we're going with that opinion that holds you do have Rishis Rabbim. The other answer in the Gemara was, you have to kind of be a little open-minded with the words. But it says Rishis Rabbim, it doesn't really mean, a Rishis Rabbim means on the side of Rishis Rabbim. But Shmuel didn't buy into that. Shmuel thought that's not right. Rishis Rabbim means Rishis Rabbim. So therefore, Shmuel disagreed on Rav. Says the Ritva, Al Mushum Takono Tiknu Dafil Bishus Rabbim, Kimushu Karav Lo Kokach Av Megureshes. So says the Ritva, so what did Shmuel say? He says, I can't accept the Rav Dal Ramis, so instead I'll make up my own thing. I'll make up a new thing called Able to Bend Down and Get It. So I partially don't understand. If we're going to be in the land of make believe, if Shmuel's willing to make things up, because he made up a new kinyan called Shetasuach Vatitlan, there's no such kinyan in the world called Close Enough to Bend Down. That's not a kinyan. So if Shmuel's going to make things up anyways, so just make up Dal Ramis, Bishus Rabbim. Bishlam, if you're telling me that I'm going to reject Rav and come up with, you know, a new halacha, that the get needs to be put in her hand. Okay, I can live with that. You don't want to accept any new ideas, so you go back to the letter of the law, and that's the letter of the law. But as it is, you're telling me now that according to Shmuel, you're going to have to make up something, right? You're going to make it up because of Takana, because of some form of a need. So why do you have to make up this new kinyan called bending down and getting it? I have a better idea. Make up a new kinyan called Dal Ramis, Bishus Rabbim, which is what many Rishonim said Rav did anyways. So why did Shmuel feel the urge to make up an entirely new concept instead of just working with the Dalai Lamas? I don't know. The answer might be that Shmuel felt that instead of changing status quo, I'd rather make something else up. Meaning, if we have pre-existing laws for Dalai Lamas, I don't have the right to start coming in and making up new laws. If I want to make up a new thing, so I can make up a new thing? It's a shver by me. According to the way the Ritva learned Shmuel, you have to make up something, so why don't you just go back to the Dalai Lamas and work it that way? I'm not sure. But the way the Ritva learned is that Shmuel wasn't arguing the fundamentals of Dalai Lamas. He was arguing that it doesn't work with Rishos Rabbim. It's a Kenyan issue. It's not her Rishos.
But it's so close that you could pick it up. So maybe he held that you needed something even more. The Dalai Lamas wasn't enough, but that the ability to actually grab it without moving.
Okay, good. We're going to see. Very good. That's where Rav Soloveitchik explains it. Okay, we're going to get to that hopefully in a few minutes. Yeah, that's the way of salvation understands this concept. we'll see a little bit more about this. But the Ritva, clearly, you see from the Ritva, that to him, that's better than opting for Dalai Lama's Bishus Rab. Okay. But not all Rishonim learned the Gemara like Rashi. According to Rashi and the Ritva, Pshat in the Gemara is that Shmuel's a whole new opinion in the Gemara. The Rosh, it's a little out of order over here, the Rosh number 6, we'll come back to 4 and 5, the Rosh number 6 does not think that's Pshat in the Gemara. The Rosh writes, He says, Shmuel lav lefrushi masdisin asa. Shmuel is not coming to explain the Mishnah. Why, says the Rosh? Di lafrushi masdisin asa. If his agenda is just to explain the Mishnah, imkein loy havle loymar omale Shmuel Abihuda. He shouldn't have said, the Gemara shouldn't have said Shmuel said to Abihuda, el hachi havle meimar. U Shmuel loymar means Shmuel is giving his interpretation of the Mishnah. Kedesh is suach v'titlanu, zayar karvla. Kedesh is suach v'titlanu, zayar karvla. Shnaim b'chayilu suach v'titlanu, zayar mechlamecht. The way all the other mandarim had their, you know, their time to express how they learned the Mishnah, so they each got a way of explaining karvla yin, karvla, and mechlamecht. Shmuel doesn't have that. Shmuel just has three words. So in order, you should bend down and pick it up. So says the Rosh, if Shmuel was coming to explain the Mishnah, you should have given him some more time. He should have been able to say, well, closer to him means this and closer to him. You don't find that in the Gemara. You just find Shmuel makes one phrase. Says the Rosh, it must be, Ela Shmuel Moide. No, Rosh comes up with a very creative pshat. Of course, Shmuel agrees to Rav's learning of the Mishnah, and Shmuel agrees to Rabbi Yechon's learning of the Mishnah. Ela Shmuel Moide, Mzarek Lagebet L'Teich Arba Amasel V'Oi Mechot L'Arba Amashim Migureshes. If he's standing 2 blocks away, and he throws the get, and it lands in her Dalai Lamas, says the Rosh, less man the Pollock, that's Megoresh, that's Dalai Lamas. The lekker man the Pollock, the Dalai Lamas, all them kernis loy. The kosher came beget Mishra Meguna. That's a big chiddush, right? We learned, Faket, the Ritva was saying that was Gufa Shmuel's problem, that you don't have Dalai Lamas, Mishra Sarab. The chay mochel kamon de Behuda Isla Dalai Lamas. Almo, the kimla hashas de Behuda Isla Dalai Lamas, and you get. So, that's not an option. He clearly holds like Rav. The gamma de Behuchim loy Pollock. So here the Rosh doesn't explain. So maybe Shmuel is arguing on Rabbi Yechanan. Good. So Shmuel is not arguing on Rav. Take it. But what about, he's not? How do you know he's not arguing on Rabbi Yechanan? So here the Rosh doesn't really explain. He just says, V'gam ad Rabbi Yechanan le'polig. How do you know that? That fakert. I would have thought that's the easier of the two to argue on as Rabbi Yechanan, because as we spent many weeks explaining, Rabbi Yechanan really pulled out of thin air a new svar called able to guard it. So if you're going to argue on any one of the Gemara, I would be more nachas to believe you're going to argue on Rabbi Yechanan. Rav, I'm okay with not arguing on it. Even the Ritzvah had this problem that how can it be Shmuel's arguing on Rav? So that's why the Ritzvah came up with this pshat. He's not really arguing on Rav. He thought that you don't have Dalet Amos here. But the Rush is very interesting to me. He just said, and he's not arguing on Rabbi Yechanan. No raya, no background, no nothing. To me, I think that's the more questionable one. Okay. Elo Shmuel amel tamid shiroi lahachmir. Shmuel told Rabbi Yehuda that I have a new chumra that I want you to take upon. What's the new chumra? Im shneim oim dimitoich Dalet Amos. Shmuel was not talking about how to read the Mishnah. Shmuel was telling a halachic situation. Let's say they're both standing in the middle of the Dalet Amos. Let's say the story is like this. The husband throws the get 8 Amos away, and then all of a sudden the husband decides to stroll into her Dalet Amos. Now, it's not a question. She was there first, she gets the Dalet Amos. Says the Rosh, even though without a doubt from a halachic point of view, she gets the Dalet Amos, she gets the get. She ain't a get. We're not going to allow such a get to go through. Ela kar of law, kedesh etesuach v'tetlenu. We'd rather the get be closer than just Dalet Amos, closer to the point where she could just bend down and get. Why? The fish pa'am shoyishi kar v'tech Dalet Amos v'gam imheim chutz Dalet Amos. Ela sheichel l'shamer v'loihu. If you have all the other criterias, ein l'smach al zeh l'pamim hu yochel l'shamroi v'loihi oishnei michoim l'shamroi u'bekal yovel l'day kilkel. Because you're not always going to know what's going on. If the get is not so close that she can swoop it up, there's room for error. You'll make a mistake about who came first, you'll make a mistake who's really guarding it. Too many mistakes. Hilchach says, Rosh, Roy, L'achim, V'chaleilu, Ashet, Tesuach, V'tetlen. So in order to circumvent all these chashas, the get needs to be close enough that she can swoop down and get it. That would somehow bypass all the problems.
Can we say that that's what Dalet Amos technically is, and that's why we have the whole concept of Dalet Amos, something's close enough?
That might have been one of the pshatim Dalet Amos. That might be one of the pshatim Dalet Amos. So we're going to see how this works. And then the Rosh says, that was one chumrah. And then Shmuel came up with another chumrah. Now I got another chumrah. Another chumrah. Not only does it have to be close enough to bend down, I want the get to be close enough, that you got to put it into her hand. That circumvents all problems. Yeah. That would possibly, that chumrah would knock out everything. It means basically, that chumrah knocks out the Mishnah. It means you can't learn the Mishnah. What I meant is that you have to put it in her hand. So Shmuel said, first of all, if you drop it close enough that she could swoop down, it's what the Gemara is going to call Migureshes for any Migureshes, meaning that technically you're Migureshes, but Shmuel said, I'm worried. If you want to have a real halachic divorce, what you need to do is put the get into her hand, which is not what our Mishnah says at all. Our Mishnah says, you want to make a divorce, you either do Rav or Rabbi Yechanan, however the Mishnah reads. Says the Rosh, he says, V'halachic Shmuel. We talk a pasuk like Shmuel. Let's say they're both standing in the Dalet Amos. Chutz the Dalet Amos, avam zarek l'toich av amasel, v'oim toich al amasel, b'hamoydish shmuel migureshes. Kach near the far sheet is. Says the Rosh, however, what would be the case if the husband's 2 blocks away and she's standing in her little Amos? He throws the get and the husband never comes within her Dalet Amos. Of course, Shmuel holds that works. Because Shmuel's not arguing on Rav. He's just saying that if it happens a case where they're both together in Dalet Amos, I'm going to have to be machmir because I'm nervous. So this is the afghan between the Rashi and the Rosh. Rashi would say if the husband is standing 2 blocks away and he throws the get to the Isha Dalet Amos, still no good. Because Rashi holds that we're not going with Rav. While according to the Rosh, Shmuel would have no problem with that, except for his second chumrah called, you need to always put the get into her hand. That's where the Rashi and the Rosh are differing, how Shmuel learned our Gemara. Was Shmuel a new opinion?
You always need to, or only if you're both in the same Dalet Amos, then you
so that's a huge machloikish Rishonim, which I hope to get to at the end of today's year. When Shmuel came up with this Chumra, was that only in these funny cases of Dalet Amos?
Otherwise, it's just go back to the Torah.
Exactly. What would Shmuel say if a guy goes over to Anisha and puts it again in her backyard? Her car? Her bag?
It should be good enough.
It should be good, right?
Right.
So we're going to see, hopefully today, I don't know, there's a sheet of Rabbeinu Chaim. Sheet of Rabbeinu Chananel, a minority opinion Rishonim that holds no, that what we've been learning for the last I don't know how many months is not true. You can't put a get in an Isha's chatzah to create a full divorce. You'll create suffocation. But if you want to have a full divorce that will mamash allow a lady to go marry another man, putting it in her backyard will not work, which is unbelievable because
anything other than her hand.
Now that's just wild because we spent so much time discussing chatzar, how it works, why it works. But at the end of the day, the first amud in Hazayrik, the first amud that we learned, says that chatzar is the din d'oraisa. So where's this all coming from? You're going to uproot the Torah? The Torah says it works, and you're going to tell me it doesn't work. So you're telling me you have chumras and chumras. So bishloma, in the case of here, you understand where there's room for error, mistakes. What mistake is anyone going to make if you throw the get in my backyard? It's really not my backyard. Where's the room for error? I understand the Rosh is nervous about error. He's afraid we're all standing around the area, no one knows who came first. Fine, I agree. But in a case where you put the get in the Isha's backyard, what are you worried about? You put it in her car. What's there to be worried about? It's her Rosh, it's her area. We're good to go. Why would there even be room? And we'll see that the Ramon and Shulchan Aruch paskens like this Rabbeinu Hanano. That if you want to create a real halachic divorce with all the trimmings, you have to put it directly in her hand. You cannot put it in her backyard, in her coat, in her purse. None of that works. Which seems to be completely opposite of everything we've been learning about in the last three blots. So Bli Neder, we'll have to deal with that as we go along. But that's the way the Rosh understood the Gemara. So what's relevant to us is how the Rosh learned the Gemara. The Rosh learned the Gemara that Shmuel is not a new opinion in the Mishnah, but rather Shmuel is just a new Chumrah of the Mishnah. He's coming along with two bomb Chumras. Chumrah number one is that whenever they're together in the Dalaramas, although halachically he's kaina, she's kaina, not him, I tell you, you need to. Second chumah that Shmuel added to the sugya was, you always need higia get liyada, you always need to put the get into her hand. Okay. Frakta Torah is gittin, the nesivis, the obvious question. He says, let's say Shmuel is nervous, that you're going to have a case where she's standing in the Dalaramas, the get comes in, then the husband walks in, and now no one knows who came first. Also, if it's close enough for her to pick it up, all is fixed. Why does that resolve anything? What does that gain? What does that accomplish? How does that circumvent the chashash? Because it's close enough for her to pick up, so what? We still could be making mistakes. He could have came first and punked the get, happened to be closer to her. How does being the get closer to her have any implication that now she was the one who was there first? If you're worried about onlookers getting it right, who came first, because it's a little closer to her than to him, is it right that she came first? Not necessarily. It means she was at the right place at the right time. If your concern is that people might make a mistake, how exactly does this fix it, asks the Torah's Gittin. Because it's closer to her, so what? So then that means she must have came first? That doesn't prove anything. So the Torah's Gittin himself gives an answer where he says, yeah. You know, sometimes you have to say to yourself, like, you know, what's a real chashash and what's too far-fetched? If the situation presents that it's closer to her, we have the right to assume she came first. That's what he answers. But the way the Achronim want to answer is based on a Ramah, in number 5. The Ramah writes a following chiddush. He writes like this in number 5. Dim habal koydim bedal ramas. He says, a huge chiddush. Says the Ramah, what happens if the husband comes first to the Dalai Lamas, then she comes to the Dalai Lamas? So technically, Dalai Lamas goes to the husband. But, based on the configuration of the situation, she can swoop down and get it while he can't. So we would have said, that's nothing. What does swooping down do? Dalai Lamas is Dalai Lamas. Says the Ramah, harezu mugresh is b'di'evid. That's enough to create at least b'di'evid. Then this is like Tetzin. If she were to get remarried, based on this get, we would not break up that relationship. Why? The kivan the yichelo suach v'litloi have a command de moti liyoda. Says the Ramah, because it's close of her to swoop down, that's as if it went into her hand. So you see from this Ramah, that kideshe tesuach v'tetlan is not stam the pshat, it's an indicator who came close, who came first. It's a kinyan. Kideshe tesuach v'tetlan is somehow a representation of bailus. That if it's close enough to swoop down, that's as if you put it into my hand. So therefore, that would answer up the Torah's Gittin's cash. Torah's Gittin wants to know, it doesn't solve the problem. It's not about solving the problem. This is now, as if there was an Isinu Rishusa. If there was an Isinu Rishusa, we move on. Now, how are we supposed to understand this exactly? Why is swooping down any type of a kinyan? There's no kinyan called swooping down. There's Dalai Ramas, there's Yochel Shamrai, and then there's Yad. The fact that it's close enough that I can swoop down, that we'll have to see, hopefully in a few minutes, if Salavechik has a piece where he comes to explain it. But that's how the Ramah comes to answer up the Torah's Gittin's cash. Okay, so the Rosh Shita has some form of an understanding.
But then he says something after Yochel Shamra, right? Any Yochel, that's not the Shmuel Shita, that's what Yochel Shita.
Yeah, he's coming. Yeah, he has a different shtickle. How? Yeah, I just wanted, the problem is I couldn't get the Ramah, I don't have the Ramah Sefer, so I had to cut from a different Sefer that quoted the Ramah, and then he did his own thing with the Ramah. So I just needed, this is the Ramah's words.
But this seems to be saying that she's able to grab it and he's not, that's
yeah. Halal, yeah, yeah.
The Yochel Shamra.
Could be.
That is separate. Not the third.
Right, the question is,
it falls within that category.
Right, the question is, how did the Ramah learn the Gemara? Did he learn like Rashi or did he learn like the Rosh? We're borrowing the concept of the Ramah to use it for the Rosh. The question is if we have the right to do that. But okay.
Is that supersede Dalamas?
According to Rashi, it does. According to Rashi, Kadesh at the Suf at the Talan was something real. Now, this. So the Rishayim talk about that. Why is every Kadesh Tzuvah V'Tetlan also Dalai Lamas? So according to the Ritva, it doesn't work Dalai Lamas because it's Rishas Rabbim. Why does Kadesh Tzuvah V'Tetlan work? So according to this Ramah, it's beautiful. Because Kadesh Tzuvah V'Tetlan is not Stam Dalai Lamas. It's Mamash I put in a single Yodai. So it's in your hand. It's good to go. Again, we have to see how exactly to understand it. The last piece of the puzzle, well, two more pieces of the puzzle, is the sheet of the Rif and the sheet of the Rambam. The Rif, very interesting. The Rif quotes on our whole piece of Gemara. The Rif just quotes Shmuel's statement. No Rav, no Rabbi Yochanan, nothing. Just Shmuel. So that obviously leads us to a quandary of how did the Rif learn the Gemara? If the Rif just quotes Shmuel, that means he holds of Shmuel. Okay, so that's two ways of learning that. You can either learn like Rashi, that means he holds like Shmuel and not like Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, or like the Rush, that he holds of Shmuel, and Shmuel is not a third opinion, Shmuel is just an addition to the first two opinions. So the Ran, number 7, writes, Ulinyan halacha harif loy hevi b'halacha ez alahad Shmuel. All the Rif brings down is Shmuel. And the second half of Shmuel, which is the Chumrah of don't do anything until the get goes into her hand, that seems to be agreed by all. So that last Chiddush is not debated. It seems to be everyone agrees to that Chumrah. What about the Machloikis, the first statement of Shmuel, about how to learn the Mishnah? So says the Ran, nearly the Kamel Kei B'Yechelon. If you're going to learn like Rashi, says the Ran, that it's Machloikis, Shmuel, Rav, and Rabbi Yochanan, so we have to follow what's called Kol Yapsak. There are rules of what do you do when various Amoraim argue with each other. Says the Ran, the Kaim Balon, Kebi Yochanan. The Hashmuel of Rabbi Yochanan, Allah Kebi Yochanan. Quotes the Gemara in Erevin. Whenever those two come into an argument, Rabbi Yochanan wins. So if that's the case, then why would the Rif Paskin like Shmuel? V'Allah, Rabbi Yochanan, Minah B'Gemara, and even Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is backed up by a Braisa. So the Ran is very troubled. Why would the Rif Paskin like Shmuel instead of Paskin like Rabbi Yochanan? So clearly the Ran understood that the Rif's statement of Shmuel is an indication that he's going like Rashi. That he's going like Rashi, that I'm picking sides, and I decide to pick Shmuel's side. To which that the Ran asks, why would you pick Shmuel over Rabbi Yochanan? Shmuel versus Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan wins. If you learn the Gemara like the Rush, then this is not a Kasha. Because according to the Rush, when Shmuel comes to town and makes a statement, he's not coming to argue on Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. He's coming to add on to Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So why does the Rif only quote Shmuel? Because Shmuel is not a new pshat in the Gemara. The Rif knows that you know the other two opinions in the Gemara. You read the Gemara. He just needs to bring Shmuel so you all understand to take the Chumrah of Shmuel. So the Rush says this before us in number 8. The Rush says, you got it wrong. The Rif's not quoting Rav and Rabbi Yochanan is not because he doesn't hold of Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Fakir says the Rush. The Rif learns like me that Shmuel is not arguing on Rav or Rabbi Yochanan. He's a third, not a third cheetah. He's an additional chumrah on both Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So that's why all the Rif quoted was a statement of Shmuel. So therefore, says the Rush, no, if anything, the Rif is a riot to me. So we have a machloikis rishonim how to learn the Rif. The Rav learned the Rif like Rashi, and he had a kasha. Why would the Rif not go like Rabbi Yochanan? To which the way the Rush learns, the Kasha is not a Kasha. Because the Rush learns that the Rif was going like him. The Rif learned the Rif that it's not a Machloikis. Shmuel is only coming to add on to Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So therefore, Shmuel is not a new Shita. Therefore, it's not a Kasha. So we have a Machloikis between them into how to learn the Shita of the Rif. Okay, so the Rif is debatable. Now the Rambam. What's the Shita of the Rambam with regard to all this? So we have Rashi and the Rush, and the Rif is up for grabs to how to learn the Rif. How did the Rambam learn the argument? So the Rambam starts off with this in number 9. Rambam is in Perek Hey. Zokti Rambam, Zorku lo b'rishus harab. You throw the get to the Ishan b'rishus harabim, oy b'rishus she'enishul shneim, we're in an area that neither of them have any control, third party. Karav loy, close to them, ainu m'gureshes. Hoy haget mechtsa l'mechtsa, the get was half and half, umi mechtsa l'mechtsa, achi hi karav lo, and if it's half and half until, or up to, closer to her, harajim safik m'gureshes. Hoy karav lo, if we'd be closer to her, kedesh et asuach v'titlenu, to the point we should be able to bow, to swoop down and get it, harezu pasol, that would be pasol, achi higia get liyodo, until the get actually gets to her hand, v'yachakach tinasei ba lechatchila, and then she may get married lechatchila. So this seems like Shmuel. Right? Shmuel's din of both chumras of Shmuel. The first chumra of Shmuel of tasuach v'titlenu, and the second chumra of Shmuel that you want to get it into her hand directly. Pasol. That means the Rabban. Right, whenever the Rambam writes Pasul, it means the get's only Pasul with Rabban. It means that if she would marry someone else, Arezu Loi Tinase, we wouldn't break up a second marriage. But if you want to do things right, that's the second Chiddush of Shmuel. The second Chiddush of Shmuel is that nothing happens right. The full divorce takes place only when the get actually gets to her hand, not close enough.
But why is that worse than Mechza Mechza? That's a suffix.
Right. Well, again, Because that's a suffix. That's a suffix. That's a suffix.
So if it's a suffix, what isn't suffix migrations better than
No. Suffix migrations is doubtful. We don't know. We would break up a second marriage on a suffix. But on a puzzle, that's only a derabbanan issue. It means it gets kosher deraisa. Suffix means even Hashem doesn't know, or we just don't know. It's lack of information.
Why do we have to mention the whole swooping thing anyway?
So I would have said. So the Rambam clearly in Halacha Gimel, who mentions Shmuel, means he passed him like Shmuel. Good. So the Rambam passes like Shmuel.
But there's also anything
that's Shmuel. That's what Shmuel says, right?
I understand, but what is Shmuel? I mean, I don't understand the whole.
So he learned the Mishnah.
So what's the difference?
Because he learned. I mean, once you have to be Magia get Liyodos, so then right, then the whole swooping is just to get you to get the Rabbanan. So if we would just learn Halach Yud Gimel, so we'd say the Rambam holds like Shmuel. Fine. There's the one problem. You got to learn Halach Yud Aleph. So like the Rambam, Kate said, who Karav Loi? What does it mean closer to him? Who yachol l'shamrei, if he's able to guard it? If he ain't yachol l'shamrei, she can't guard it. Zehu karev lo, that's closer to him. Shnei yachol l'shamrei, both of them are able to guard it. Shnei yachol l'shamrei, zehu mechtza l'mechtza. So now I'm totally confused. First halacha, he brings down Shmuel. And now he brings down Rabbi Yochanan. So which one is it? Do you hold the Shmuel, do you hold the Rabbi Yochanan? So what?
That's not the situation. Yud Gimel limits it to the beginning.
Yeah.
It's b'shus harabim, or b'shus hayin l'shashneim.
Okay. But Rabbi Yochanan's also, when's Rabbi Yochanan talking about? Rabbi Yochanan's also in the Mishnah. So I would have learned the Rambam like the Rush. If you learn the Rambam like the Rush, it's beautiful. Shmuel is not coming to be an own new opinion. He's coming to tack on a Chumra onto Rabbi Yochanan. Or for that matter, maybe even Rav. So Shmuel, and this is the way the Rashba learns the Rambam. The Rashba learns the Rambam that Shmuel is not a new Shita in the Gemara. Shmuel is not a new opinion. Shmuel is just explaining and adding Chumras onto Rabbi Yochanan. So if you learn like that, so then it's not a contradiction in the Rambam whatsoever. The Rambam, yeah, it's a little funny why he went that with Shmuel first. Unless you say that Shmuel is being magdir, the next statement, it's a little bit of an introduction.
So points with Shmuel, if she's not close enough to pick it up, he still holds from Dalai Lama, right?
According to the Ritva, if it's an Rishas Rabbi, no. According to the Ritva, if it's an Rishas Rabbi, he would not. According to Shmuel, according to the Rush, yes, he would. So that would be a Machlokes
Mishnayos. Just two ways of demonstrating control.
Exactly. That's what I want to get to right now. So if you just turn to the next page, I by mistake put it on the wrong side. If you look at 9b, so if salvation comes to discuss this Rambam as well. So he says, chatting this Rambam is like this. V'nira, the be'inun kedesh etesuch v'tetlenu. What's the significance of being able to bend down and get it? L'po'el es tvisa se'isha. That's what accomplishes that the isha is holding on to this get. Now again, this is something that the Ramah seems to be alluding to, that there's some connection to the get being close enough to swoop up, that's somehow as if I have it. It's in my control, it's in my hand, in my rishus, whatever word you want to use. Now you need that, because without that, how does it work? What type of kinyan is kadesh to swoop up to tlanda? Ubi'inon hi yichay l'shamra. Said of salvation, we also need that she's able to guard it. V'u'en yachal. Why? Mishum shim hu yachal l'shamra yesh lo tfisa bahaget. Then he also has some form of power, connection, relationship in the get. Shemafkas is tvisas isha. That takes away from what she has. Now it's like two people holding on to two sides. Each one has something that makes it theirs, and each one has something that makes it theirs. So you have two people. It's no good. It's an interesting concept of salvation. What the isha needs to have control in is not what the husband needs to ruin her control. Two separate, they come from two different angles. There's one thing of what makes the get the ishas, and what does the husband need to do to break that connection that the isha made in the get? So it says in salvation like this. For the isha's job, the get needs to be close enough that she can swoop down. That's what makes the get connected to her. That's the connection for isha's get to make the get as if it's biyode like the Ramah or somehow Barushusa. But what does the husband need to do to ruin everything? All he needs to ruin it is loy bein in korva kizev isagi biyachol shamre. All the husband needs to inject into the equation to mess everything up is if he's able to guard it. Interesting way of looking at things. So according to salvation, the Rambam learns that there's two separate issues over here. There's what she needs to do to make the get closer to her, and whatever he does to make the get closer to him, which will ruin whatever she built. So what she needs to make the get closer to her, she needs kedusha tesuach v'tetlan. But all he needs to ruin it is being able to yachal shamra.
And how do you define that? He's in the Dalai Lamas,
so yachal shamra means that for somehow, based on the configuration of the get in the Dalai Lamas, she's not guarding it.
It's not automatically Dalai Lamas, correct. Just by size.
That's right. That's correct. In the Dalai Lamas, you might not need yachal shamra, but that's machlokes b'shoinim. But if you assume just because we're in this area, I could be the way it's situated. There's a big rock, you know, whatever.
So it's not just the dimension.
According to Rabbi Yochanan, it's not about area. It's about control. Area. Correct.
Then how do you put in that he needs to bend down? If there's absent
of... No, that's his point. His point, that the starting point is what the Isha needs to inject is she needs to do her part of Kirdesh and Suha Tatlana. Now, it doesn't need, and if he's also with the Suha Tatlana, it ruins it. That's not what you need. There's something else for the husband to ruin it. His ruining is through Yochel Shamre. That's how he learns the Rambam's two statements of Shmuel and Abiyachan. Interesting that you would have thought that they should be consistent. Whatever the husband needs to make it his, whatever the wife needs to make it, it should be the same. Salvation is saying it's not, because what the wife needs to make hers is not necessarily the same that the husband needs to ruin it for her. Okay.
More.
100%. Okay, so let's see the bottom ties. Everything I'm trying to get through to finish the sugya so we can start a new sugya next week. Really, am I fulfill that, but we're going to definitely try today. There's a bottom ties, it's a number 10. Well, again, Shmuel said two statements. His first statement was a machloikis rishayim, how to understand it. Shmuel's first statement is that you need to be able to swoop down and get it. That was statement number one. Statement number two of Shmuel is, but don't do anything until the get gets to her hand. What does that mean? So Rashi, everyone seems to agree on that nekuda. It means when, although the Mishnah says everything is fine and everything is acceptable, I do not want any get taking place that does not, halachically, does not go into her hand. So the question is, how far was Shmuel going? Does Shmuel only mean these types of creative cases where you're using Dalet Amos or using Kuf Amos, or he meant every get in the world? So Tosis writes over here, Vayinu Dafka B'Shus Rabbi, the first page, number 10, left corner. Says Tosis, no, don't misunderstand Shmuel. Vayinu Dafka B'Shus Rabbi, this is only talking about when you're performing the get in a questionable area. Avo B'chat Seira, if you're performing the get in her backyard, ain't Tzarech She'Gil Yodah. There's no reason why the get needs to get to her hand. Kidal Merle'el. Says Tosis, we learned the Gemara together. We learned the Gemara in the Ein Zayin of days. It was probably almost a year ago. Where the Gemara says, we had a case of a Shechiv Merah. A guy was on his deathbed. It was Friday. He wanted to divorce his wife, so there should be no Yibam Shailas. And they came to Rava. They said, Rava, how are we going to make this happen? So Rava said, no problem. The gets in his backyard. Let the Isha go over, and she'll be Kaina Kinyi Chatzah. According to most Rishayin. If you remember, there was that one Shitas Rashi that learned it wasn't Chatzah, but instead it was Kinyan Agav. Which we're going to have to rehatch that entire sugi again, okay? But most we showing when that was Kinyi Chatzis. So you see clearly. That was not just a Suffolk Gerishin. That was a real Gerishin. So you see clearly that by a Chatzir, all you need is put the get in the Chatzir. You don't need the get gets to their hand. Because the problem was that the get couldn't get to their hand because it was Shabbos, and the get's Muktzah. They couldn't move the get. So they had to come up with some way to make the Kinyi, so they made Kinyi Chatzir. Says Taisus, you see from there, that when it comes to Chatzir, you don't need Gita Liyad. Shmuel doesn't seem to argue. However, says Taisus, Amiu Ba'orich, Ba'erich Get, cause of Kablanim Rabbi Seinu. There's a Kabbalah from our Rabbanim. Afilu Zorkel B'Teichat Seiru Loi Mishtri La'alma Adamot Egit Liyot. Even if we were to throw the Get into her Chatzar, no good. U'maisi Mahor, the Omer B'Yushalmi. And they back it up with Yushalmi. Yushalmi says, Hamachmer Shabakul. There's different girsas in Yushalmi. Either it's Hamachmer or Hamachaver, which means the best. Shabakul and Achi Itnenu Liyoda. The best thing, says the Yushalmi, put the Get in her hand. The anus, so you have Yushalmi. So Pashtis, you'd say, big deal. Machlik is Bavli Yushalmi. Pashtim like Bavli. What's the get all bent out of shape about? Says the Taisus, I'll do even better than that. I'll tell you that this Yushalmi is not even arguing in the Bavli. I'll tell you, the Ein Raya, says Taisus, the Ikal Meimar, the Mayri Bishas Rabbim. Maybe that Yushalmi is talking about the case of Shmuel like our Gemara, where it's in Rishas Rabbim. The Yushalmi doesn't say we're talking about a Chatzar. So I'll tell you this Yushalmi that says you got to get into her hand. It's talking about Shmuel's case of Rishas Rabbim. So therefore, says Taisus, no Raya. I don't think it's true. And Taisus adamantly disagrees with this premise of the Aruch. Okay. Now, if you look over here, number 11, on the next page, the Tur quotes this as the name of Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel kosav, afilu zarek lo get b'chatzeiroi lo mishtri l'almo. She's not divorced, adamoti liyoda. V'teima adayni avi arash. My father's matmi on this. Like many other Rishayim are. Almost all Rishayim are. The Kashek HaSavti, he has kamasim. Kashek HaSavti, like I wrote, is what he agrees to. So basically, the Tur and the Rosh, all on the same page, they don't understand this Rabbeinu Chananel. Comes along the Ramban, and the Ramban talks about this Rabbeinu Chananel. And the Ramban writes like this. Two chidushim from the Ramban. Chidush number one from the Ramban is that the Ramban is partially bothered. How can Shmuel take the whole Mishnah and throw it out? There's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kara of law works. Come along, Shmuel, no, doesn't work. Who gives you the right to do that? There's a Mishnah. Who gives you the right just to throw the whole Mishnah out? So the Ramban explains. Says the Ramban, the whole idea of these types of get is working with Afkinu. El b'makim sheish lochus lekilkul. It was only if we needed to make these types of get. Says the Rambam, maybe when the Mishnah said Karvla works, that wasn't a statement that should be made for Dairy Dairies that Karvla works. That was a pressing time in history where they needed to come up with easy ways to make Gittin, so they came up with this thing called Karvla. Comes along, but don't misunderstand that this is supposed to be a psak for Dairy Dairies. So the Rambam's coming to answer the question, how could Shmuel erase the Mishnah? He's not erasing the Mishnah. The whole Mishnah was only meant for that time in history. It was some time of Hashmad, and therefore they needed to be lenient about how to perform Gittin. But to say that the Mishnah meant for David Darius for thousands of years, we should use in Gittin, that a Karev Lo said, no such thing. Okay. This is a very big chiddush. Yeah, this is a very big chiddush to say that when the Mishnah makes a statement, the Mishnah makes a statement, and we say, that the Mishnah was only for a certain time and generation. It's very hard to know. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. Who knows? Maybe it's a big chiddush from the Ramban, but it answers the kash that we had. Yeah, it's that's where Moshe has his famous tshuva when he talks about allowing a community to say slichas early on Motzei Shabbos. He makes it at least two or three times in the tshuva that this is a haras shah. Okay, and this is a haras shah. That was 1956, I think that was the tshuva was written. And he writes, because people think that an answer for today is still an answer for tomorrow. Everything changes, you know, things change. So
they kind of makes sense because the pasuk is, there's no ambiguity in the pasuk.
Right? Yeah,
there's
so.
I mean, to ask the question, what does biyada mean, why would you even ask that question?
Yeah,
there's no other possible interpretation unless you need to find one.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've been doing. We've been spending months and months trying to figure out what the Torah meant when it said anas and biyada.
Right, because it could have said
Bereshusa,
and then that would have opened up.
Yeah, we assume Biyada means. Right, that's the other problem. If you're going to say it means your hands, so then how do you know Chatzah works?
Yeah,
which the Gemara makes drashas. Yeah, we try to understand. This is Ramban, but then it gets even better. Says the Ramban, what about this Rabbeinu Chananel? The Kasav Rabbeinu Chananel va'at l'tavet ba toira v'shim migureshes l'gamri. Ad l'gamri. And the Rabbeinu Chananel had this chiddush that we're not going to allow any divorce to go through. Unless it actually gets to her hand, he writes, and we have a Kabbalah like the other Rishayim mentioned, like Taisus mentioned, we have a Kabbalah that this din of Rabbeinu Chananel is even when it's in her chatzer. You're not going to permit her. Rabbeinu Chananel is one of the earliest Rishayim. So writes the Ramban, even though, like Taisus pointed out, that the Bavli seems to clearly disagree, I think we have to be Choshish for Rabbeinu Chananel. The Gemara says not like that, but he was, Rabbeinu Chananel was a Chosh of Yid. He carries a lot of weight in Halach. So although all the Rishonim, the Pemoli, reject Rabbeinu Chananel, the Ramban and other Rishonim say, but I can't reject Rabbeinu Chananel so fast. Rabbeinu Chananel was one of the earliest of the Rishonim. We got to take what he says seriously. So we have to be Choshish at least for the Sheet of Rabbeinu Chananel. If you look in the Ramah, number 13, the Ramah writes the following statement. Zogter Ramah, Avalim Zarek lo the Teich Dal Ramas, if you throw the get within her Dal Ramas, Evein Abal Nichnas the Teich, and the husband doesn't go into it, nowhere there, Noch Shash of Shmuel, right? The husband's two blocks away, Harezim Ugarashis, right? Gvaldik. V'chol Zem Medina, this is all by the letter of the law. Aval Lechat Chila, Ein Legarish Afilu Litin Haget Le Teich Chatzera. You can't perform a divorce by putting it in her backyard, Oy Le Teich Mal Busheha, by putting it on her clothing. Ela l'toich yodei mamish. You must put the get into her hand. V'yodei tei psucha, metchilas, sanasinas, if her hand must stay open the entire time. Where did this come from? Where did such a chumrah come from? So it comes from the Mordechai. If you look in 14, the Mordechai brings down this chumrah. Says the Mordechai.
Why is that a chumrah? If it was always intended to be that way, and they just got flexible.
Na chotzer. Chotzer. Chotzer is deraisa. The Gemara learned out in the beginning of the parak that kinya chotzer is the din deraisa. So now you're coming and saying, well,
who says it applies to get?
That's we learned the pasuk that says even by get.
Okay.
So the Ramah's going, the Mordechai is going to argue in the Gemara. The Gemara says clearly that chotzer works midarais. That's no one, as far as till today, disputed that point. We've been learning like that for the last, I don't know how many months we've been here. We've been learning that assumption.
Because it's ki'ilu biyad.
Yeah, the Gemara says. The Gemara makes a drasha. Now comes along the Ramah and says, not so fast. Every get needs to be put into her hand. What happened to the Torah? You're going to override the Torah? Why? What? When? Where? There's no basis for this. So the Mordechai writes in number 14. He writes, "Hamachmi b'kulan shitena liyada tovei lebracha." No guam. There's a minug. So the garish idea is to get techbeisa oichatzera. There's a minug, says the Mordechai, that we don't use a get in her house or in her chatzur. Vafil b'toich kalos, even into her bag. Oy b'toich malbusher, into her clothing. Vatam. Question is why? Bishloma in the rush. Well, when you're talking about in rishus a rabbi, I understand mistakes can happen. You want to be careful. I get it. But what would be wrong if you put the get in her purse? What chashash is there? That's her rishos l'kuli alma. You put the get in her backyard. She owned the house for 50 years. Where is the error that one can make? Listen to this one. It says the Mordechai. V'ulai. He says over here, l'fisha pa'omim mal busheh shu'ulin. Maybe her clothing were borrowed. V'ulai ha'bayle makbidim akach. And the one that she borrowed it from never gave her rights to make kinyonim. V'imkein lai ha'vegito. Kimin delav l'hochi ha'shulinu. She never borrowed it to be able to use it for kinyon. L'chein toiv losses ha'get liyode mamish. That's very interesting to me. Your purse, today a person, a kalosel, a basket. The basket was like, you know, what they used for their jobs. Usually don't borrow that. It's usually yours. A purse, very rarely do women borrow people's purses. A purse is your purse. Clothing, bizman, is that very rarely. Fine, but let's say I'll accept the Mordechai. I'll accept it. What about Chatzera? It's her house. Well, you mean maybe she borrowed the house? Maybe borrowed the house. You know? Very really people borrowing houses, and if they're borrowing the house from somebody, they're using it, you know, it's very, even if I accept the Mordechai that explains the Ramah about clothing, which, okay, we have it a difficult time today, because today it's probably not the case. Most people keep their own clothing, they don't really borrow clothing. Fine, but what about my backyard? My car, it's my car, right? Go look down, it says it's my car. I'm in debt because it's my car, right? No shayla. So what are you worried about? At least, so it could be that we're talking about someone who's renting. That's a soicher, but again, a soicher is different than a mashal. A soicher, pashtus, you would be able to be kainin. It's yours. So again, generally speaking, most chatzerim. Again, today we have, you know, different ways of dealing with real estate. But generally, you're back again. If you know it's her backyard, you know she's been living here for the last 20 years. You have to suspect that maybe it's a rental. And even if it's a rental, so what? Pashtus, if it's a rental and the husband has no rights to it, so then she should be able to be kainit. So the only thing I can think of, and again, I don't have a good shot, is that there'll be some form of exera. That if you allow clothing and bags to work, I'm sorry, if you allow her backyard to work, so next thing you know, people say, oh, bags, clothing's all the same.
Maybe it's her father's and she's living in it. You think it's hers, but it's not.
Yeah, I guess one could, come up with a way that, you know, we all thought, you know, there are always people that I meet, at least where I live, and I always thought for years and years they owned the house, and they tell me, no, I've been renting. I said, really? I always thought you owned. So I guess there is such a metzias out there that people, but again, Pasha's a regular renter.
You're not renting, you're somebody else, your father owns it, your relative owns it, letting you live there.
Yeah, that would be a shoyl, I guess. Yeah.
So then that would be your chutz.
And no, but that would be, again, you'd have to know what type of relationship that is. Would that be considered borrowed, or would that be considered...
So that would be the case of Michigan.
We don't know. The mission just says her chatzah. So that's the chayr to me, the chiddush of the day. But just to wrap up the sugya, so we say we finished it. The Ramban comes to the defense of the Yerushalmi. The Ramban thinks that maybe you can answer up the Gemara. Let's just a quick chazar. The Gemara said that the lady wanted to get divorced, so she went over to the chatzah and she made kinyan chatzah. And by the kinyan chatzah, she was divorced, and you didn't have to worry. So the Ramban says maybe that Gemara is not a raya. Because I'll tell you, that Gemara doesn't mean when she made kinyan chatzah they really were divorced. That Gemara would just mean because this fellow, before he died, he didn't want his brothers to fall yibum to his wife, for whatever reason. Either he liked his wife or didn't like his wife or didn't like his brothers, I don't know. So he wanted to make a get just enough to say that now they can't do yibum, they have to do chalitza. So when the Gemara, by that we learned together, with the whole story with the Shechiv Merah, never did it mean that that's a real divorce. It was just enough of a divorce to be able to create a matzif that now you can't do yibum. That's what the Ramban wants to suggest. Okay, so Blineda, next week we'll just touch upon this machlokes, do a little bit of chazar, and Blineda, we're moving on to new sugya of Agud Gabe, the classic case of the Gemara with a get in the string. We're going to get into the nitty gritty of how to learn Agud Gabe.